and welcome to the audio choke here at MMATorch.com. Make sure you follow us at Twitter, also MMATorch at Twitter as well. So there's the audio choke, the MMA Torch, and then hit up the forum.
I am Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. So UFC 107, a pay-per-view in review.
Yeah, it was a good show. I liked it.
You rhymed. I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, I do my best. All right, so where do you guys want to start with something like this?
I think we should start at the main event.
Okay.
BJ Penn, Diego Sanchez.
Guess
tough to
happened.
Watch.
Yeah.
Wow.
it pretty much went down, I think, the way it was supposed to. Like we said before, on paper, BJ Penn had everything, and he took apart Diego Sanchez for 23 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It was painful. I mean, he almost put him away about a minute into the fight with a big punch that knocked him down, and he had him rocked. He was chasing him around for a little bit. But Diego recovered, and he put on a good show. He kept coming forward, although I think that one punch pretty much changed Diego's fight plan from going, you know, super aggressive style to taking him to the ground, because he didn't like getting hit like that.
They did not meet in the center of the ring.
No, but yeah, it was definitely, you know, watching that fight, I think that fight was more of a testament to BJ Penn's skills than it was, because it was a very one-sided, lopsided affair, and it got really ugly for Diego Sanchez, but it was more of a testament to BJ Penn's skill at 155 than it was to Diego Sanchez looking bad. He did look bad, but that was more really BJ Penn looking super good.
Yes.
Because Diego Sanchez, I mean, he didn't have much to offer him, but it wasn't like he was having bad technique or anything. It just, he wasn't on the same level as BJ Penn.
So. Well, as you said on Saturday, the best fighters make the second best fighters look very bad.
Yes.
Yeah. And Diego Sanchez is one of those guys. He gets a lot of heat from people because he's, you know, one of the Ultimate Fighter guys first season. He doesn't have any truly elite wins, but he's got a hell of a lot of really solid wins. And he went into this fight, he was the underdog. But, he pretty much got manhandled that whole fight. He should have not changed his fight plan and just run in there and got knocked out, because that would have been a much nicer night for him. He'd look a lot prettier, and it's possible that he's got a career-altering cut on his forehead now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure BJ Penn lobotomized him, basically, with that head kick. It was, took a 3-4-inch cut in his forehead to basically end the fight.
Yeah, well, it could be a cut that, you know, never heals 100%. He could get that thing reopened in fights down the road. Kind of like Nick Diaz after he fought Gomi. He has had some serious issues since then, just bleeding all over the place, and that could have happened to Diego.
Yeah, a lot of times you end up hearing fighters having to deal with the scar tissue from cuts like that, and you know, Nick Diaz actually, I believe, had to have surgery for that. One of the Diaz brothers. I was getting mixed up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dumb like that.
Is this could this be one of BJ Penn's last fights? Because that seemed to be what they were hinting at, or are they just putting the drama in there?
I really think the question is, and it's a legitimate question, is what's left for BJ Penn at lightweight? Because he has really taken out all the challengers put in front of him in pretty outstanding fashion. I mean, whenever BJ Penn's been questioned about his abilities or his gas tank, that sort of thing, it's always been at different weight classes. He's always fought it up heavier weight classes when he has problems, but at lightweight, I mean, I don't think there's any question that he's one of the most dominant, if not the most dominant fighter at that weight class, in the history of MMA so far.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, looking down the list of challengers, it's kind of hard to say, you know, maybe you could give Florian a rematch after a year or something, but, you know, you'd have to really rebuild him quite a bit. But, yeah, it's tough to say.
I think it's a little early for people to say that it's time for BJ Penn to move on, because he has only defended his belt two times, unless you count Sean Sherk, which was him holding an interim belt,
right,
and beating Sherk. I don't think it's time to say that he has conquered 155 completely and it's time for him to move on, because there's been much more dominant champions in history. Matt Hughes defended the welterweight title 5 times before losing, and then won it back and defended it a handful of times again before losing it. So while BJ Penn looks to be unstoppable, and there's nobody I would pick over him, he hasn't truly cleaned out the division yet. 155 is very deep. I would pick BJ Penn in a heartbeat over guys like Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard, but those guys deserve shots. I think Gray Maynard is probably going to be up next because he is currently undefeated, and he's just been beating everyone in front of him. He's not the most exciting guy, but he's got the takedowns that may challenge BJ Penn's takedown defense. Of course, BJ Penn is a world champion at jiu-jitsu, so that doesn't mean he's going to win, but he deserves a shot.
Yeah, you know, I've had this discussion, I think maybe with you guys before, but even with other people who I watch MMA with, and it's the same thing almost with Anderson Silva and a little bit with George St. Pierre as well. Just because they've proven to be dominant so far doesn't mean you don't have you have the move to a different weight class or anything like that. It's now really to kind of cement the legacy, that type of thing. And just because you don't think a challenger has a shot to win doesn't mean you don't have them fight. You know, the challenger, whatever shortcomings they may have against the champion, still deserves that shot. You know, we talked about this a little bit with Dan Hardy versus GSP, and you know, it's come up with Anderson Silva, now BJ Penn. But I mean, he still has that right to defend his belt, and you know, you have the challenger fight the champion and see what happens. I mean, just ask you know, Matt Serra is basically the one example you can always go to about, you know, well, this guy obviously doesn't have a chance, why bother having him fight? And then he cleans GSP's clock the first time. So there's always that opportunity, and it seems kind of cliche to say it's an MMA fight, anything can happen. Not anything can happen. I don't think anyone's ever going to get, like, you know, fatalityed or, you know, someone's going to turn into a dragon and bite off the head of a competitor. But, yeah, there's always the, you know, the puncher's chance, or, you know, something could always happen, and you got to have the guys fight.
Well, also, BJ Penn is in a little different situation than Anderson Silva. One, that Anderson Silva has had a longer reign of terror over middleweight than BJ Penn has.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Anderson Silva has gone up to 205 twice and has been extremely successful in both those times. BJ Penn has had pretty mixed results when moving up in weight class. He blasted Matt Hughes out of the water in the first fight, but then he lost his second one, and he's lost to George St. Pierre twice. BJ Penn's in kind of a weird situation where he looks to be unstoppable at 155, but at 170, granted, he's fighting the top guys, and he's fighting GSP, who is bigger than BJ Penn. I don't know that he's necessarily better in terms of pound for pound, but I don't see BJ Penn ever winning that fight. So moving up for him, I don't think is a good idea, at least as long as George St. Pierre is there. He might be able to take out some of the other guys, but you look at guys like Anthony Johnson and Thiago Alves, who are just huge. And, you know, I don't see how BJ Penn is going to get through some of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the people at welterweight are really cutting down to make it. Anthony Johnson's a perfect example of a guy who's probably too big for the division. But GSP is a really big welterweight as well. What about the possibility of, and I know it wouldn't be in the UFC if he dropped down a weight class, but WEC has the lighter weight classes. Would BJ Penn possibly... I mean, as far as visibility goes, it wouldn't be nearly as interesting, but I mean, there might be some more interesting fights down at lower weight classes, or you could even bring in, I believe it was mentioned, Joe Rogan might have mentioned Shinny Aoki, but that's always tossed around, is bringing in fighters from, you know, overseas, that sort of thing.
Excellent. So what's next for Diego, two words, Destiny Sanchez?
You know, he definitely needs to be built up after that. He needs to heal up first. Dana White has said that he has never seen a guy as so busted up after a fight.
Yeah, that was brutal. I was impressed. You know, I mean, there's not a lot that you can say about his, you know, what he had to offer against BJ Penn other than tenacity and that yes mentality. I mean, because really, it's really easy to make fun of Diego Sanchez because he's pretty crazy. But, I mean, when it comes to mental preparation and... I don't think I could see too many fighters taking that much of a beating and still being able to come forward and go the way he did. But, yeah, I mean, I would imagine he's going to be out for a while healing up from those injuries. You know, at some point down the road, I'd like to see a rematch between Diego Sanchez and Kenny Florian. They fought in the finale of The Ultimate Fighter Season 1, and they've both grown leaps and bounds since then. And that'd be an interesting fight to see, I think, at some point.
That would be a fun one, but I'd just like to see Diego get somebody easier first. Because he is definitely one of those guys who's got the psych thing going on, and I can see his confidence just be completely shaken at this point. Whether or not he can get it back without fighting and winning, I couldn't tell you. But I think he should just, you know, I'm not saying he should get a complete scrub, but he should get somebody who's not a top contender. And Kenny Florian, he also lost pretty bad to BJ Penn, but you know, I think he's a bit rough for Diego. Give them both another fight, then let them go at it. Because I would like to see that rematch also. Kenny Florian, though, I'd like to see fight Sean Sherk, have that rematch.
And I was just throwing out there, I'm actually looking up his record now, but I was thinking, yeah, maybe Sean Sherk you can match up against Diego Sanchez at some point, too.
Yeah, that moving into the Kenny Florian Clay Guida fight, you know, Kenny Florian showed off that he's got some new boxing skills. He's been really good with Muay Thai, but, you know, he had some really good hands going on in the Clay Guida fight, and he also was stuffing takedowns, which I was not expecting that. His wrestling hasn't been his strongest suit. I mean, it's good, but it's not as good as, like, his jiu-jitsu and his striking. And he was stuffing some serious takedowns. When he fought Sean Sherk, that was a long time ago. That was before he was given a lot of the credit that he is now, where people look at him as a legit contender. And Sherk just took him down and manhandled him for 25 minutes, and that was really about all that fight was. So I'd like to see that rematch, because I think that Kenny Florian could pull out the win this time.
Yeah, and just speaking of the fight between Florian and Guida, I mean, that and the BJ Penn Sanchez fight are both kind of perfect examples of, we both, on our last episode, we were both talking about how both Guida and Sanchez had a shot because of their kind of their spirit and their attitude and their seemingly unendable gas tanks, which kind of fall into the intangible aspects of fighting. But both those fights are really perfect examples of that'll only get you so far, and more often than not, superior technique and skill will often win out, despite, you know, whatever someone might have to offer in the energy department, which are very important in a fight. But obviously, both Guida was outclassed standing in that fight, and
but he'll definitely have a job for as long as he wants, as long as he keeps fighting like that.
Yeah, he's one of the more entertaining fighters the UFC has. My little brother was watching that pay-per-view with us. I think that was the first time he'd ever watched a UFC, and Clay Guida is now his favorite fighter. It was fun watching him come out, listening to, what was that?
The Use.
Oh, yeah, he was rocking out.
Here I am.
you know, the referee stops him to check out his cut, and he just burps in the doctor's face. You know, ridiculous stuff, but it was pretty fun.
He'll have a job.
Yeah, definitely. He's always going to have a job. Dana White's not going to fire that guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's there's multiple reasons for that now. I mean, there's a lot of fighters who come off looking good, even in losses, just like the way they present themselves. And I think it's fighters who, maybe even subconsciously, but know how to market themselves beyond their win-loss records. You know, they have an energy, or they have a personality outside of just in the ring or in the cage, that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean. And the second aspect is, now that we have, you know, not that anyone's close to competing straight up with the UFC, but as far as, you know, you have Strikeforce now and a couple other promotions that are clearly, you know, just even by default, a second, you know, the number two mixed martial arts brand. You don't want to have UFC fighters, even if they've lost several fights, who are popular, such as Clay Guida. I mean, he's dropped several of his last bouts, and he still got one of the biggest ovations on Saturday night. You don't want to have them jumping ship to a rival promotion now, which this gets me all excited because it brings me back to the Monday Night Wars.
Back again.
But yeah,
huh?
I mean, so there's a couple reasons you don't want to do that. But yeah, just those fighters who bring that energy and bring the fans, no matter win or lose.
And it was just a really good card overall. I mean, a lot of brawls, lots of strikings, you know, any other matches of note. I mean, they were all really good.
One that I was really impressed with was Frank Mir against Jack Congo. I had predicted that Frank Mir was going to win in the first round, possibly even in the first half of the first round, but I did not see him getting that big knockdown at all. I thought he was going to shoot in for the double leg and take him down and then grab an arm or a leg or something, but he took a guy who is one of the best strikers in the sport and knocked him down in like 30 seconds or something.
Yeah, I don't think any of us were really surprised by the finish of the fight. I was definitely surprised by how fast it happened and how it happened. But, I mean, you know, I don't know if Mir showed off super improved stand-up, but he did. He showed some good strategy there. But also, Chuck Congo needs to keep his hands up when he goes in like that. I mean, he's shown in the past he's a very good striker, and if he lands, he's going to knock you out for the most part. But, you know, to not be able to defend against or to have a defense ready for that overhand shot he took was bad news. And, you know, granted, it didn't knock him out. It was a knockdown. You know, he hit the ground and was
starting to defend himself, but he just doesn't have that great a ground defense. So even though he was appeared to be pretty cognizant after that shot, there wasn't much he could do, and Frank Mir really really torqued on him. And you know, I'd say the extra weight Frank Mir's added on really helped a bit, and I think it's going to serve him well, hopefully, in the future for his chomping at the bit to get back at Lesnar again, because the weight really seemed to be a problem for him the last time. He was just really outsized by Lesnar. So,
yeah, Frank Mir has been going through some strength conditioning lately. He got a new coach or whatever and has been doing the weightlifting and all that stuff, and he gained a lot of weight. He weighed in at 264.5, which I think usually means that he actually cut weight, which not a whole lot of people do to heavyweight. And he was at something like 240 before, which brings me to something that kind of worries me. A guy gaining that much weight in a matter of a few months, last time he fought was in July. I don't like to throw around steroid accusations. I usually like to, believe a guy until he gets caught. But I'll just say that I really hope that Frank Mir put that weight on legally, because that's a lot of muscle in a short period of time. Especially for a guy who already is an elite athlete. I know that he certainly added strength training to his routine, but you know, he's not like he was just some guy sitting on the couch and then started hitting the weights and gained a lot of muscle. That's a lot of muscle to be putting on in a short amount of time. So I hope he did it clean, and I hope that if he didn't do it clean, he stops because he's big enough and he at least maintains cleanly.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason to believe that he did, and it's unfortunate this enters the conversation, but it's just one of those things that has now, because people have got caught doing it before, and like I said, there's no reason to believe Frank Mir did, and certainly the highest level athletes, if they do. What was more kind of surprising to me is that he hadn't done that in the past, the strength and conditioning training. But yeah, I mean, he did have several months, so it's very possible that athlete that who's training that much could certainly do that.
We'll just go with innocent till proven guilty.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent point.
Yeah, yeah. There's always that concern, I guess, especially, it's kind of like a basic reaction. I mean, my friends who don't watch too much MMA or see one or two fights, the first time they saw Brock Lesnar, it's like, oh, that guy's on steroids. And, there's no reason to necessarily believe that, but or have any of those accusations tossed around. But it's part of sports culture now. You know, if someone's exceptionally large or seems to have made leaps and bounds, whether it has basis or not, there's always in the back of someone's mind, you're always like, well, there's always that. And I think it's more of a concern than like at least for me, it's more of a concern than an accusation almost. You're just like, oh, I hope he doesn't, hope he wasn't doing that or whatever. But that's why they test him, and pretty confident in the system so far. So
wonderful. All right. Well, we have some WEC this weekend and perhaps a little head to head with Strikeforce.
That's right. It's an exciting weekend. Get your DVRs prepped.
Right. Yeah.
Strikeforce has got a pretty exciting show coming up. They got the return of Kung Lee, who was, I believe, their middleweight champion.
Mm-hmm.
He completely destroyed Frank Shamrock in his last fight.
Broke his arm, yep.
Broke his arm with a kick and proceeded to kick him in the face several times after that. And, Frank Shamrock's a big name. He hasn't been too relevant this decade, but he's got some legit wins. He dominated Phil Baroni in a fight. And Kung Lee, he proved that he was more legit than I think a lot of people were giving him credit for in that fight. But then he took some time off doing some movies, and I guess he had some time between movies, and they signed up this fight. Okay. He will be fighting against Scott Smith, I believe, bringing back the title? Is this the title?
I don't think it is, actually, which is weird, because Kung Lee did vacate the title because they weren't sure about his schedule, and then, it was fairly quickly after that they announced he was going to be fighting again, so it was just kind of weird timing, but I think the concern was that, because he's not consistent in that, he's voiced his opinion that he wants to continue to make movies, so he can't be relied on as a constant. But no, I don't believe it's for a title. I think that was vacated, and Masawi has it now.
Excellent.
I just butchered his name, but yeah.
But that should be a fun fight. He's fighting Scott Smith, who's a guy who loves to throw hands. I would expect that to be a stand-up battle. I think Kung Lee would probably take that one.
Yeah, Scott Smith is another one of those fighters. I think he's very fun to watch, and he's a very winning fighter in his personality and his style. But he doesn't necessarily win with that style, and he has kind of yet to show a diverse game plan, which he needs. Kind of, you know, you could get away with that a few years ago, but now you really got to be able to mix up all aspects of MMA to be very successful. And you know, I like Scott Smith. He's fun to watch, and he has a great highlight reel knockout back in the day when he was in the UFC over Pete Sell, I believe, where he basically took a hard shot to the stomach, and then as he was kind of keeling over backwards, much of the strength to knock the crap out of Pete Sell as he was coming forward. So he's got that going for him. But yeah, I see no reason why Kung Lee shouldn't take this unless Scott Smith is really willing to bring something else to the table that he hasn't shown so far.
Well, also, he is the puncher and has that puncher's chance.
Yep.
But
they don't call him Heads of Steel for nothing. He's got some heavy hands.
Yeah, he hits hard, but I wouldn't predict he gets the win. Also, Josh Thompson and Gilbert Melendez finally going down for the rematch.
Yeah, it's a week out about, and no injuries have been reported, and it sounds like they're both going for it, which is exciting.
Is this a big match?
It is. It's a lightweight championship match, and it's a rematch. And you know, it was put off before. Thompson had some injuries, and Thompson's not in the same camp as Kung Lee when it comes to, you know, having other interests. But he has done some other things. I believe he might have tried his hand at acting or even modeling, perhaps. But he's been out there doing some different things, and finally healed up properly and ready for the fight. And Gilbert Melendez has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Gilbert was the favorite when they fought a year and a half ago, and he ended up losing. Josh Thompson won. But, Josh broke his foot, and I think he re-broke it a couple of times while he was healing. So they kept announcing this fight, and it got put off. And this is actually the third time, knocking on wood, it's actually going to go down. So that's exciting. They both have the same record, actually, of 16-2. So, a lot of wins, not a whole lot of losses. They're looking pretty good. Another fight that I'm interested in is Jacare is fighting Matt Lindlin. And I'm sorry if I horribly mispronounced that nickname. I don't always pronounce the Brazilian nicknames correctly.
Yeah.
But he's a world champion jiu-jitsu guy, I believe. He's won a few ADCCs, Abu Dhabi, and... Matt Lindlin, an incredible wrestler, longtime UFC guy, and he's racked up some notable wins outside of the UFC since then. That should be a fun one. Jacare fought Randy Couture in a grappling contest a few years back, which was ruled a draw, but I don't think that was necessarily judged. They just didn't come up with a submission.
Excellent.
But yeah, that should be an interesting fight. What are they? What weight class are they fighting at? Do you know for that fight?
It doesn't say here on the fight card.
Okay. Take a look. Oh, I should mention I got to amend a statement I made earlier. I said Gegard Mousasi was the middleweight champion. He's actually the light heavyweight champion, I believe. Jake Shields is the middleweight champion for Strikeforce.
Well, duly noted. Seven Hail Marys and punch yourself in the crotch 18 times.
Yeah, you know, I just figured I should mention that for, you know, accuracy's sake.
That
and everything.
Would, yes. Thank That's you right. for adding.
That way we don't look like a complete bunch of idiots.
Right.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a solid card. Unfortunately, it's being reported that... Robbie Lawler is scheduled to fight on this card. He was going to be fighting Trevor Prangley, but Prangley has reportedly pulled out with an injury, so that's unfortunate. It sounds like Strikeforce is looking to get another opponent for him, so hopefully they'll still come together.
Yeah, it's going to be hard on a week, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that fight's 5 days out now, and I mean, even if they do find somebody, it's always kind of going to be tainted, because if Robbie Lawler wins, it's like, well, yeah, he beat a guy who was out of shape, and if he loses... Then he looks really bad.
Yeah, and Robbie Lawler could use the win. He came off a pretty quick loss, actually, to Jake Shields. It was a standing guillotine he lost in. But yeah, Robbie Lawler is another one of those guys, more diverse, diversified than Scott Smith, but heavy hands, likes to brawl and throw, and but has obviously shown a weakness for you know, some of the more technical aspects of the you know, submission game, that sort of thing. But you know, another fun fighter to watch, and hopefully he'll get a get matchup with a decent opponent even on short notice.
And then Zuffa's WEC is going on at the
yes.
same time.
That's right.
Anything fun with that?
Well, the main event, Donald Cerrone's fight, and I got to pull up the card here because, you
it's
know...
It's
going to
be on the Versus channel.
Yeah, this will be on Versus, and I have to plead, you know, a little bit of ignorance. I watch WEC, but it's one of the things that kind of falls to the lower of my list when it comes to keeping up with the different fights. So I'm not as familiar with a lot of the fighters. But yeah, a good, solid card. And the thing about the WEC is the names might not be as well known aside from, you know, the top names... For WC, the Uriah Faber, Miguel Torres, mm-hmm. now Jose Aldo. But those fights are, most of the fights in WC are usually pretty good just because the lower weight classes always have a lot more, you know, have a lot better gas tanks for one. And I think because the pool's smaller, the talent's actually a bit tighter together, you know, since there's not as many people in those divisions, at least in the, you know, to a known to an American audience, you have a lot better, closer competition.
Yeah, they're also a lot faster paced as a general rule. Mm-hmm. In fighting, you know, you got the heavyweights who they've got the excitement of the fact that the fight could end at any given second because a guy can get knocked out, but, you know, usually after 5-10 minutes, the pace has really slowed down. And you get the guys at 135, 145, those guys will beat each other's faces into hamburger. They, you know, they don't have the one-punch knockout power as a general rule. It does happen. There are, you know, some guys who have some extra power in there. But, you know, they can't put as much weight into their punches. They don't have as much muscle mass. So as a result, instead of going for that big one shot, they just beat the crap out of each other, which is always entertaining for us.
Yeah, especially because they keep a very good pace. Yeah, the main event is Donald, the Cowboy Cerrone, taking on Ed Ratcliffe, I believe. And Cerrone's coming off of, Ed Ratcliffe. He's coming off of a loss to Ben Henderson, and that was a perfect example of one of those fights that it nonstop action, basically, from beginning to end is really great, really close decision there. But, you know, Donald Cerrone's one of those pretty exciting fighter to watch for sure. He's got a lot of submission wins and a good card. And, again, not familiar with a lot of the names on it. We have Chris Hordecki, who I believe fought, or at least was signed with Affliction back when that was still a promotion. And he's one of the younger fighters who's been around for a bit, though. But, yeah, it's just, one thing you can count on for WC is it's going to be some solid fights, even if it doesn't have the name recognition of your UFC or now even at this point a Strikeforce card.
But it is owned by Zuffa, who just has a who struck a deal with the Versus channel, so we'll be seeing some more stuff with that.
Right, yeah. I mean, Zuffa's been working with Versus, but it sounds like, and Greg, I understand you can talk more about this, but yeah, it sounds like they struck a new deal where not only WC will continue to air on Versus, but also sounds like the UFC might end up on their airwaves as well?
That is correct. This was just announced today, I believe, that as part of a merger with NBC, Versus is going to be getting a real big push. They're trying to make it kind of a competitor to ESPN. And as a result of this, they're adding some more sports to it. They've already got WEC, which is, it doesn't have the name recognition of a lot of fighters, but the WEC has become a name. People know what the WEC is, much like people know what the UFC is. So they've been doing a pretty good job of building that up, and also the UFC is going to be doing 2 shows a year on Versus now, which is pretty fun. It sounds like Versus is going to be seen in a lot more households than it used to be. We get it up here in Anchorage, Alaska, but from what I understand, it's not necessarily basic cable everywhere.
They had some issues with... not Dish Network. They're having some issues with one of the cable providers down on the lower 48, which is, again, not a problem we hear in the...
In the great state of Alaska.
In Canada, Junior had problems with, but yeah, they lost a lot of viewers because of that. I believe it was DirecTV, I believe, was the who they lost. Stopped carrying them back in September, I believe.
But this is a pretty big deal, I think, actually, for a lot of the WEC guys. You know, in the UFC, the top guys make some big bucks, but in the WEC, you got guys like Uriah Faber who are fighting for, you know, stuff that sounds like a lot of money to me, but to a lot of these big-name fighters, you know, they're making hundreds of thousands of dollars, and Uriah Faber can make, like, $40,000. But they're going to be side-to-side with the UFC now, and there's been talk in the past of getting some of these lower weight classes, getting some of the guys into the UFC, guys like Uriah Faber, guys like, you know, Mike Brown, guys like Miguel Torres. Not necessarily the entire weight class. They'll keep the WEC around, but get some of these bigger guys on the pay-per-view. That way they can start making some better cash.
Right. I mean, pay-per-view is really where for fighters and for the UFC or other you know, promotions, that's where the real money is. I mean, you see it on, like, the UFC fight nights that are broadcast on, like, Spike or something like that. The paydays are a lot smaller for those fighters than they are on a pay-per-view. And, you know, the top name stars can get a portion of the cut from pay-per-view view money. But, you know, I don't think I'm mistaken, but I believe Carlos Condit used to fight in WEC and moved up.
Yeah, he
moved up since then to the UFC, and that's, you know, interesting in itself. But, you know, one of the, speaking of the paydays, I don't want to go off on too big of a tangent, but it's interesting because we were mentioning earlier BJ Penn, what does he do now? And, like, if he could go down a weight class, maybe that'd be better than going up a weight class. But, you know, the money is a big issue there. And perhaps, you know, if the money was more equal between, you know, the different weight classes being the WEC and UFC, you'd have fighters willing to fight at a better weight for them as opposed to fighting at a, you know, a weight that either they're not as successful at or, you know, that they've, in BJ Penn's case, have shown complete dominance at, you know, they'd be willing to go down to a different weight class for the WEC on a different network and not have to sacrifice a larger payday. So that'd be it'd be interesting to see how this all ends up panning out for that aspect as well.
You mentioned Carlos Condit coming to the UFC. He actually was the WEC welterweight champion, and about a year ago, I think it was, the UFC cannibalized three weight classes of the WEC's, the welterweight, middleweight, and light heavyweight. And, you know, the WEC used to have those weight classes. They just moved all their guys to the UFC. So that's why we got guys like Steve Cantwell and Brian Stann and Carlos Condit and Kael Sonnen and a few others that are fighting in the UFC all of a sudden, just because WEC decided to concentrate more on those lower weight classes. And they also decided to let those guys who are kind of becoming big fish in a small pond, let them move on and test themselves against some top guys.
Well, WEC and Strikeforce go head-to-head this Saturday. George St. Pierre, how about that? Let's move there.
Yeah, George St. Pierre just won the Canadian Athlete of the Year Award for 2009. This is his second straight time.
That he won the Athlete of the Year for 2009, or
no? I think the last time it was 2008. Matt,
oh me,
yeah. DSP is huge in Canada, apparently.
That's right.
Who knew?
Yeah. Well, I don't really know a whole lot of Canadian athletes outside
Gretzky.
Of DSP.
Yeah,
but yeah, Gretzky's old news.
Yep.
He's not playing no more.
No, he's done. But yeah, that's the only.
I'm certain there's got to be some other hockey players, but honestly, I couldn't name five hockey players.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's probably some Canadians out there, but GSP is better than the rest of them.
So what is he up to now? Is he training?
He
gearing up for a fight, maybe?
He's got a fight coming up in March. Actually, it was just announced, UFC 111, I think it is, which is the pay-per-view where GSP will be fighting Dan Hardy. That's the day before WrestleMania.
Ooh.
So they're not necessarily saying that they're going head-to-head with the WWF on that one.
Yeah.
But
this is their little tip of the hat, too,
yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Well, maybe. Maybe they're just trying to see, you know, if the fans only have $50 in their pocket and they like both sports, or, you know, sport and show, what are they going to spend their money on?
Hmm.
You know, I don't know that it's really going to make a huge difference. I don't know that WWE and the UFC really have that many crossover fans. I'm certain there's some, but I don't know that, you know, it's a huge percentage.
I would like to see the numbers, though, for after that, because, I mean, I'd put my money down UFC every time. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you said it's for WrestleMania?
WrestleMania.
That's a pretty big event. And, you know, I was a casual wrestling fan back in the day. I don't think I never, ever, ever, ever purchased a pay-per-view. But, you know, so there could be some crossover. I think a lot of people who grew up watching wrestling and then, you know, oh, it's not real. Let's watch real fights. You know, there's that. But, you know, if they whether or not they stuck with wrestling, too, would be a big question. But, yeah, I mean, WrestleMania could be a pretty big deal, so it'll be interesting to see. But, you know, the UFC can be kind of secretive with their pay-per-view numbers sometimes as well when, you know, either if they're not interested in telling people or if they didn't have a great show, that sort of thing, then they don't necessarily let those numbers leak out as quickly. So
it's true.
Well, one thing that I've read before, though, which is why I feel that the UFC will beat the WrestleMania in terms of numbers, is that while they both have the weekly show and they both have the pay-per-view, the WWE might beat the UFC in ratings on TV, but the UFC does better in pay-per-view. UFC does better in pay-per-view. WWE can get millions of people watching their weekly show, Raw and SmackDown, but then they'll get like a 250,000 pay-per-view buys, which is still great. You know, I would love to get a 250,000 pay-per-view buys.
Yes.
But
for this podcast at MMATorch.com.
Yeah, $50 a piece. That'd be great. But the UFC, you know, they've pulled in over a million a couple of times now. And, you know, that, in terms of the WWE pay-per-views, I know that WrestleMania is their biggest one, but, you know, you got a big star in GSP. I don't know what the full card is going to be, but I can see that beating WrestleMania.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they are trying to be competitive with it, and who knows? I mean, they've kind of, in the past, not necessarily been directly competitive.
But there are a lot of people out there, though, the conspiracy theorists or like that, that are worried about any kind of crossover between the events themselves.
Right, yeah. So, I mean,
maybe that's what they're trying to say, is like, hey, no, we're competing against them. See?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, but myself, I'm not necessarily concerned in fueling a fire between, you know, the war between fake fighting and real fighting, you know.
Jesse Ventura is, what are you hiding?
Yeah, they're each their own thing, and I think there's strong markets for both of them, and, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who will buy both, but it'll be interesting to find out when it actually all comes together.
As to your original question, though, Matt, GSP injured his groin when he fought Thiago Alves. He did a really good job of telling us exactly what it was.
Yeah.
His anterior ligament, I think.
Yeah.
Which means nothing to me. But, he flat out told us what he injured, and it turned out to be correct. And he's been nursing the injury. He's been nursing the injury, and he's coming back in March. So GSP will be back with a fury.
Yeah. One of the better corner men talks was when GSP told his told Greg Jackson that he had, in fact, hurt his groin, something in that area. Jackson told him to hit his opponent with it. So very, very, very good stuff from the fight against Alves. But yeah, it'll be exciting for GSP to come back, and he's one of their bigger stars for sure. Good drawing power so far, at least. You know, some people kind of question Dan Hardy's, whether Dan Hardy or not deserves the shot, and that'll be maybe telling on the pay-per-view numbers. But who knows? I mean, plenty of people will just plunk down money to see GSP fight, which is can't fault him for that.
Well, UFC 108 is going to be on January 2nd, and it's going to be a nice break, change of pace for Dana White.
Yeah, I think Dana White is finally going to get that nap in that he's been waiting for a long time. He has been doing shows at a breakneck pace for the UFC. I mean, in the last month, we've had two pay-per-views and two live shows for free, which is insane. That's a lot of work for that guy to be putting together. So he's got a few weeks off. He can go have Christmas with his family and enjoy the new year. But then, bam, back in it with Rashad Evans fighting Thiago Silva.
Nice. Right on.
That card's really been murdered with injuries for the most part. I mean, but some very solid fights on there, but as far as, like, you know, name power, aside from Rashad Evans being on there coming off the stint on The Ultimate Fighter, you'd kind of tough press to find, you know, like the big name fighters. That doesn't mean it's not going to be a good card. Oftentimes the cards that don't have the big names end up being full of solid fights. But yeah, it'd be a fun. And then, you know, following that, you got I think within a week or so, then there's a fight night following right afterwards.
Yeah, with Nate Diaz fighting Gray Maynard as the main event. I am excited about the Rashad Evans-Thiago Silva fight, though. We'll probably get into that more in future episodes, but those are two guys who are both undefeated other than their run-ins with Lyoto Machida.
Yeah. Which would be, yeah, we should definitely kind of table that for when we get closer to the fight. But, yeah, interesting fight, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how that sets them up in the divisions, considering they both have losses to the champion right now. And I think all of it's kind of going to be, not necessarily dependent, but will be mixed up a bit more if and when Rampage returns as well.
Well, the Audio Choke would like to extend congratulations to UFC Undisputed for winning at the Video Game Awards.
That's right. It is the best individual sports game of the year, which sounds like a pretty small topic, but it beat out Fight Night 4, which is a big deal. The Fight Night games have been around for a long time and are really great boxing games. I own Fight Night 3, and I loved that game. Fight Night 4 was the first one to feature Mike Tyson in it. It had a big ad campaign. Also, Tiger Woods Golf was in there, which has been around for like a decade now, so that must be a pretty popular series. And Wii Sports Resort, also in the category. So UFC 2009.
We congratulate you, and I've witnessed the trailer for UFC Undisputed 2010.
Now with 100% more Kimbo Slice.
You know it.
That's right. I just hope that they don't make him too powerful, because that's going to be really upsetting to me if he's got like this kick-ass ground game on that game.
Yeah, I don't think they've been fairly good with, you know, I have the UFC Undisputed, I guess the 2009 version it is now. I think they did a pretty decent job with not making, you know, the popular fighters super overpowered, but at the same time, you know, a lot of popular fighters are popular because they're good.
Because they're super overpowered?
Yeah, who knows? But Kimbo Slice might be the exception to that. It'll be interesting to see. But also kind of funny, Tito Ortiz is in the current UFC Undisputed game, and he was in it when he was still on the outs with the UFC. His stats weren't as good as I thought they would be. Same could be said. I believe Arlovsky
and Tim Sylvia
were all featured in the game as well, and their stats were not as high as I was expecting. Surprise, surprise. But who knows? I don't see them necessarily throwing the stats too high for that, and this is really geek conversation now, which I'm excited for.
Yay!
But, it was a very solid first game, and I'm excited for the second one. It'd be interesting to see what they add to it. There's definitely plenty they could fix and clean up.
Well, I was a big fan of the first game. As far as a first effort, it was extremely solid, and it was a very deep game, too. I mean, I found it to be pretty easy to pick up. You know, there was a few things you had to learn right off the bat, but for the most part, you know, one button, one limb, you know, you hit this button, it's always going to be a right punch. You hit this button, it's always going to be a left kick, and you can do some things to mix it up, to make it so you can throw some combos better, but it was pretty intuitive for the most part. The ground game was pretty complicated. It took a little bit of getting used to, but, just looking at the preview for this new game, I noticed some characters were bobbing and weaving, which was not at all in the first game. The first one, you could block high, you can block low, or you can just be too far away from him to hit. Also, it looked like there was a takedown up against the fence, which looked interesting. And they just showed some more submission attempts. It looked like somebody was going for an anaconda choke at one point in there.
Did you see any southpaw stances?
I didn't. But interestingly enough on that...
Fingers crossed on that.
I played a really old school UFC game. Matt played it with me for years. Sudden Impact or Throwdown. There's a few of them.
The one with Tito Ortiz throwing a flying knee on the cover or something like that. Those games were... I mean, it was exciting to have a UFC game. But those games are bad.
They were pretty terrible. But I noticed one day on that, everyone fought southpaw. Every single fighter on those old school games had their right hand forward.
Huh.
Why, I don't know. But yeah, it was always interesting.
Yeah, because that was one of the... again, not like a lot of huge knocks for the first effort for UFC Undisputed, but it was a lot of smaller technical things where the southpaw stance being one, using the cage being another, that sort of thing. And the bobbing and weaving is actually very good because we saw in the BJ Penn fight, very useful. He took...
extremely.
So many... Or avoided so many punches. Diego Sanchez was able to land practically nothing. A lot of that could be attributed to BJ Penn's movement. So,
and we should almost be mad at ourselves for not squeezing this into it earlier, but BJ Penn outstriking Diego Sanchez by such an incredible amount.
Yeah, according to fightmetric.com, it was 150 strikes by BJ Penn to 8 by Diego Sanchez. 8 punches, 7 to the head and 1 to the body.
That were landed, or is it just in total?
Those were landed.
Those were landed.
Okay, wow.
I mean, he threw a lot more shots than that.
150 punches.
Yep. Yeah, landed.
Whoa.
to eight. Well, that's strikes in general. He threw that big old head kick, so that's got to be one of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's brutal. Fightmetric also said that Diego Sanchez had 27 different takedown attempts. Zero successful takedowns. So, that was an ass kicking. Nothing more to say on that one.
Tying back into the video game really fast, I'd like to see that those type of statistics implemented more into the UFC game.
Excellent point, yeah, and some awards and stuff
that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think they had a little bit of that in the first one, but it'd be really nice to kind of get the breakdown after your fight more specifically, and hopefully we'll get something like that, just kind of so you can almost be more analytical about your video game fighting.
That would be kind of nice, especially since there's the online stuff, and you know, you got your headset on, you're talking all kinds of smack and whatnot, and you manage to go 15 minutes without anyone getting knocked out, and it goes to the decision. And there were a few ones that I felt that I won, and there was a few that I was surprised that I won, and I'd like to see the breakdown.
Yeah, I did like how the UFC game replicated bad judging. That was I was impressed by that, actually.
All right, and finally, American Ninja Warrior, is that the official name of the show?
Yes, the American adaptation of the popular Japanese, competition show.
Yeah.
Game competition.
Which I'd like to just throw out there, that's probably my favorite show on television outside of the UFC is Ninja Warrior.
It's the best time suck in the history of cable television. I love watching it. You just turn it on and you just can go totally like zen watching
you can easily sit through like 3 hours of this stuff.
Well, mixed martial arts notable Mayhem Miller participated in this latest episode.
Yeah, perhaps one of MMA's most boisterous, outgoing personalities. A perfect example of someone being popular just outside of the cage almost as much as they are inside, despite their achievements inside of the cage. But he showed up on the American version of Ninja Warrior, and it was exciting. He was one of the bigger competitors, and I think he had a good showing for sure. He completed the first stage of the course, but unfortunately was knocked out due to time. The top 30 competitors with the best times moved on to the second round, and he was bumped off. He had a time of about just under 3 minutes, about 2:50-something, I believe. And some of the top times were under a minute easily.
Well, he's not going to be the only one that we're going to see on that, though. I mean, at least for forever. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the Japanese version
had the Ham Brothers in it.
Right, there's always, celebrities of some level showing up with those things. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see Mayhem Miller show up on the Japanese version because he's actually huge in Japan. And that's where he's done a lot of his fighting, and that's where he is gets a lot of his notoriety from, is his outgoingness in Japan, so... Who knows, but it was fun to see him on there. I actually didn't know he was going to be on there until I saw it on the show, and I was like, hey, man.
Hey. Wow.
He's got an MTV show.
Right on.
I had actually seen on an older episode of Japan ones, Genki Sudo had been on that show before, but I don't know if he's been on it multiple times. The one time I saw him, though, he gets on the rolling log where you're supposed to just hold onto the log while it flips over and over and over again. And the log actually fell off of its track while he was on it. Oh, so
unfortunate.
He got eliminated, but you can't help but feel it wasn't his fault.
Yeah. And, you know, given the fact that G4 repeats Ninja Warrior practically every day, I don't know if they'll be doing that with the American Ninja Warrior as well, but so there's a pretty good shot that you might see Mayhem Miller pop up on G4, the American Ninja Warrior, you know, once a month or something, depending how many times they repeat it. Interesting and a nice little... It's always fun to see MMA personalities pop up in other things.
You know, like the cast from The Wire or from Oz or something like that.
Hey,
like,
it's that guy, yeah.
All right!
Cool. Well, if anyone can lend themselves to a mainstream appeal or, showing up on fringe cable channels, I think Mayhem Miller's a perfect candidate for branching outside of the MMA community.
Yeah, he's definitely got the personality for it, unlike, Chuck Liddell, who does a lot of stuff.
Yep.
And Chuck Liddell is not a bad guy. I think he is a good face for mixed martial arts. I actually did watch the episodes of Dancing with the Stars with Chuck Liddell on him. And, you know, I mean, he wasn't exciting, but he was cool. I mean, he seemed likable, and he was that cage fighter guy. And I think he actually, he gave a good image to the sport. A guy like Mayhem Miller might get people to be more likely to watch it.
Right.
But
A guy like Chuck Liddell still does a good job of just gaining acceptance.
Right. And Mayhem Miller is one of those people who's into promoting himself to get eyeballs, whereas Chuck Liddell lets his actions, for the most part, speak for themselves and is relatively soft-spoken. But, you know, MMA needs both types of personalities, I think.
As do podcasts. Well, thanks for hanging out with us at the Audio Choke here at MMATorch.com. Follow MMA Torch at Twitter. Also, the Audio Choke at Twitter. And please post things on the forum, questions, anything that we missed, egregious errors in our in our speak, and we'll see you next time.
I am Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. Thanks for hanging out.
The Audio Choke.
The audio.
Yeah. The audio joke.